Hi there, and welcome to this week's episode of Over and Under, where we look at one overrated film and compare it with one underappreciated film. My name's Kareem, and I'm going to be joined this week by Ege and Mike. Hi, guys.
Hey, what's up? Hey.
And our overrated film for this week is the 1996 film called Independence Day, directed by Roland Emmerich and starring Will Smith, Jeff Goldblum, and Bill Pullman.
Yeah.
I chose this film because, you know, we were thinking about films like, I guess, alien films. And I remember this film being such a big success when it came out and everyone talking about it. I was growing up in London at the time, and it was definitely a massive smash. And it was kind of the first time that Will Smith, I mean, he'd done, I guess, 6 Degrees of Separation beforehand, but... Mm. And maybe like one or two other films. But this was the film that really kind of landed him as like a big box office star. Maybe like Bad Boys before that. But
yeah,
this film
it was because of Bad Boys that like kind of solidified his action star status.
Yeah, and he was my hero when I was younger. Like I loved The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And it was kind of cool to watch him in this action, you know, kind of leading role. And the film... Yeah, when I was younger, actually, I really liked it, but I kind of thought that after all this time, it would have, it probably would have gone stale for me. And but I watched it recently, and I actually really, really liked it. So I chose it as my overrated film, but actually, I don't think it's overrated at all. I think there are things about it, aspects about it that are corny, over the top, silly. It's kind of like a, you know, a big blockbuster B movie. But at the same time, you know, in terms of what it sets out to do, I thought it was very, very enjoyable and fun.
Okay, so first of all, did you dress like Fresh Prince of Bel-Air when in the early 90s?
Well, actually, I was born and raised in the streets of Wimbledon, but I got into a fight with a bunch of tennis players, and my auntie sent me to go and live in Oxford.
Wait, it's supposed to be like, because Wimbledon is a rich neighborhood, isn't it?
It depends. I mean, I grew up on the mean streets of Wimbledon.
Yeah, I'm sure. So, I mean, it's supposed to be like Fresh Prince of Wimbledon. Like, you were in... What's like a shitty side of London? What's a ghetto?
A shitty side of London. I don't know. I've never been to a shitty side of London.
There's a man of privilege for you. So you're coming from like the Harlem of London or whatever the fuck that is, and then you're like, you get into a fight, and then your aunt is like, you gotta go live with your rich uncle in Wimbledon.
Yes.
And then you're like, you know, they teach you how to play tennis, and you teach them how to like speak like Cockney slang or some shit like that.
Exactly.
Sweet.
Yes. Yeah.
That sounds awesome. So that was your life.
It was basically my life, but then I made the transition and I starred as a gay, a gay man, in 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon, and then
you were a cop in Miami.
Yeah, I think I was Whoopi Goldberg's son.
Oh yeah,
in a movie.
No, no, that wasn't his son. That was his. That was her daughter's best friend or something.
Oh, so I was Ted Danson's son.
Something like that. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't really remember that movie that well.
Okay, but then I went into Bad Boys, and I was there with a friend of mine who was a comedic actor at the time. Well, he's actually a comedian. His name was Martin.
I remember him.
Yeah, and then...
And then you got into a... you defeated the aliens, and then you got into a secret society that defended the world from aliens.
Oh.
And it was like a really old, like, cranky white dude who was your partner then?
Yes.
I don't know. I'm trying to remember, like... couple of details about your past. All right, but yeah, basically what I was gonna say is that yeah, I think the special effects and the way it's put together is like this, you know, it's basically like this really schlocky blockbuster movie, and I really liked it when it first came out. I was 16, and I remember going to see it with my friend, and we were like, man, that was awesome, and you know, it was so much fun, and the explosions and stuff like that. But now that I watch it, I think it laid the groundwork for like these really dumb blockbuster films like Transformers, where it's like this really broad juvenile humor with the background of like, you know, this giant kind of destruction and this like really bad writing full of cliches and stuff that just doesn't make any sense. And you know, I guess we can get into the fact that an Apple computer can be plugged into an alien mainframe later. But basically, I think, I mean, it's still, the special effects are practical, so I think that stuff still holds up a little better than the Transformers films, and the editing and everything with the action scenes is more cohesive. But yeah, I don't know, I just found it to be like Transformers, like the beta version of the Transformers movies, like really, really dumb, but like better handled in terms of the visuals.
Well, I think that the Bad Boys was the beta version for Transformers, and The Rock were the beta versions for Transformers. Mm. Anything that Michael Bay guy does were the beta versions, and they were pretty good. The Rock, I thought, was kind of cool. It was even then, it was like over the top and ridiculous, but it was within the realms of decency.
Mm-hmm.
And then at some point, Michael Bay was just like, you know what? Let's make Con Air. And right. After that, let's just keep pushing the envelope until we make films that are so bloody stupid it defies imagination.
Yeah, that's true.
It's got nothing to do with Independence Day, although I do see like correlations. I see what you're saying, but I like Independence Day. Just it was, you know, it was like a B movie that they just infused with all kinds of money, and it just became this. You know, the speech that Bill Pullman gives, you know, the Independence Day speech, which is so ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
I hated that. But but there was just scenes where, like, Will Smith is chasing down the alien in the ship, and he's like, he beats the alien ship, and he's like, what? And then the alien comes up, and he knocks the alien out, and he's like, welcome to Earth.
That's like borderline parody, though, the fact that you can punch out an alien.
I know, but at the same time, it was like, I can't remember. I mean, I remember being in the cinema when that happened and everyone started cheering. And this isn't an English cinema where people don't clap during the movies, and they certainly don't cheer and whoop. And this was like, even during that scene, the whole cinema just went off.
I remember. Mike, what do you think?
I like, as far as the technical things go, I can't really say anything bad about it, but I think it started like a trend in movies that really bothers me, where there's so much tragedy that even the small victory that they have can't make it not seem like a tragedy. Because I don't know how many millions of people die in Independence Day, but the fact that at the end, like, Will Smith lives and stuff, I don't really care, because you already see like whole cities getting destroyed.
Yeah, that's true. And that's the thing about it, is that it created, I mean, it didn't just single-handedly create that. A lot of disaster movies, like, operate on the same level. There were a lot of disaster films in the 70s, which I think, you know, films like Towering Inferno or The Poseidon Adventure, I think they were a little bit more heavy-handed in terms of, like, you know, you felt the tragedy, but there was still, like, goofy stuff, like, you know, hundreds of people are dying, but you're supposed to care about whether or not these two, like, good-looking characters are going to hook up, and whether or not the dog is going to make it. And that's kind of what it is that it did kind of... What Kareem said about, like, a B-movie, they took a B-movie and threw tons of money at it, I think is, like, the perfect way to describe it, because people talk about, like, the emergence of the blockbuster era in the 70s with Star Wars and Indiana Jones as those types of movies where it's just like, oh, they're just B-movies with a big budget. But the difference was that they took B-movie concepts like Star Wars and Indiana Jones, and the writing, characterization, everything else, they applied like A-movie, like top-level attention to detail on it. With Independence Day, it truly is like a really cheap B-movie script. And everything else in it is very schlocky and B-movie. The only difference is that technically, in a completely visual way, they were like, okay, we're just going to make this really cheap B-movie with $100 million. I think that's the only difference. Yeah. But I think, it's true. It's like, it's, you know, even what you're saying about, like, the tragedy and then at the end of it, it's not that big of a triumph anyway. But then at the same time, when that tragedy is happening, it's like millions of people are dying, but you're supposed to care if a dog makes it alive, or, you know, like the cheesy one-liners and the broad, ridiculous humor that was kind of like adapted by the Transformers movies. It's all like it's all there. But I think visually, the special effects, especially, they still hold up really well.
They really hold up well. And you know, the best part about the whole thing is that at the end of the film, when the there are kind of these fractured pieces of alien ship falling to the earth. And, you know, you see all these different countries, like America's cheering and the English is like, yes, we got them, well done. And, you know, all the various countries. And then they go to Egypt and I think they're throwing spears at the And I'm Egyptian. And I remember as a kid thinking, wow, that doesn't feel too good. So.
And also America's the one who kind of leads the charge and, like, saves the world, basically.
And we all know it would be England followed by Egypt. So I think that was a little bit...
That's true.
And the whole film would have taken place in Wimbledon.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, they would solve that shit in Wimbledon. It would be a plucky English-Egyptian kid hacking away at his computer.
Exactly.
And then find the virus and infect the alien ship.
Yeah.
That's exactly the way it would have happened in real life, I think.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
But yeah, so some of the things that are like really, really ridiculous about it, of course that virus thing is what everybody always makes fun of. And it's still like even when I first saw it, I was just like I thought it was the most ridiculous thing ever. And I guess the idea is that in H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds, it's a virus, like a organic virus that kills all the aliens. So they were trying to kind of put like a high-tech modern reference to that, but it's just ridiculous that a Apple PowerBook, you know, and also like tons of product placement because of that, of course, that Apple PowerBook has the same, they didn't have USB back then, but the PCI connection, you know, somehow the aliens created the same exact technology that we had. With the same operating systems and everything. So that, like, it just cracks me up every time I see it. But I guess that goes well kind of hand-in-hand with the B-movie approach.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's, does that, I mean, is that, that kind of stuff, does it, like, bother you guys? Or is it, like, in a film like that, you're like, just screw it and just go with it?
Yeah, I mean, I was suspending my disbelief the moment Will Smith punched the alien who had, like, a Skeletor face mask on.
That's true.
You know, and, like, knocked him out. And then, but, like, his hand didn't hurt afterwards.
Yeah.
I know that these are just small things, but they're little things that, you know, like the fact that, I can't think of anything else, to be honest with you. But anyway, like, they were glaring. The fact that there's a Mac-compatible alien ship up top is, I get what you're saying, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. But I don't know. I think, in a way, yeah, it's the same like Transformers formula. The reason that I hate Transformers is because I find them to be like visually and orally, whatever. Like
anally, so, I think.
Anally, yeah. I find them to be visually and anally. whatever, you understand what I'm trying to say. Like, all around,
so.
I just find it to be extremely annoying at the same time, so there's nothing to really hang on to. The thing with Independence Day is that the especially the first initial attack, the way it's edited, and all the technical parts of it that are put together, if you just, like, let go of the shitty script and the acting and all the, like, ridiculously, like, innumerable plot holes, then it becomes kind of fun to watch. But as, like... You know, do you really blame the movie that kind of created this monster, or do you just, like, let it stand on its own?
Sorry, I didn't understand that last point. What did you say?
No, I mean, I'm trying to say that, I kind of blame Independence Day a little bit for paving the way to these, like, really, really dumb blockbuster movies like the Transformers franchise.
I disagree, I think, because Pulp Fiction paved the way for lots of stupid films like that film Thursday, for example.
Yeah. What
Mike,
the hell
you disagree?
That? that was Mike's horn that went, like, you know, whenever he vehemently disagrees about anything, that's basically what you hear.
You know, the point I'm making is that Pulp Fiction, which was, you know, an incredible movie and definitely infinitely superior to something like Independence Day. No, don't ever say that. but But, you know, Pulp Fiction spawned a whole host of very poor imitations. One of them being like Thursday. Another one being like, I guess it wasn't an imitation, but the one that his friend wrote, Killing Zoe.
Killing Zoe, yeah.
You know, and it was just like, you could just see that you kind of had to put up with all these people trying to do what Quentin Tarantino does, even his writing partner. And it was like, yeah, it's not ever going to be close enough. So I like the fact that Pulp Fiction was there, and it's kind of just an unnecessary sadness that all these other things followed, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to... I guess it's true in the sense that it's hard to blame movies for opening up. You know, like when Star Wars came out, it followed with like Battle Beyond the Stars and Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
And all those like really shitty movies.
And when Independence Day started, and then it followed up with Battleship Earth. So, yeah,
that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think, Mike? Do you think a film kind of opening the gates to like shittier films, like they could it be blamed, or should it just stand on its own?
Well, I don't know. With Independence Day, I feel like it's more just sad because it's like one of the last, like you said, practical effect movies.
Mm-hmm.
And like people tried to match that, but now, you know, around the turn of the century, it's sad to say, but they shifted towards like computer generated things, and it just doesn't hold up. And like you said, like it's kind of like the first nail in the coffin for those kind of movies.
Do you really think that it doesn't hold up, though? Like, the computer effects for something like Star Trek or, I just think they're just phenomenal. That film, like, we saw, Sunshine, was it called Sunshine? The
Danny Boyle movie?
Danny Boyle movie.
Yeah, that looked really good.
It looks incredible.
CGI is a blessing and a curse. It's like, if you do a really bad job at it, especially... it's not just in terms of just the animation itself. It's like you need to know how to shoot it, or actually at least frame it, because you're not shooting anything. You need to know how to frame it and edit it really well in a cohesive way. And the rendering and the artistry behind it has to be amazing. And there has been a lot of films that like rely too heavily on CGI that becomes dated after a couple of years. The good thing about Independence Day, and it's the same thing with Titanic, it's like these films came out at a point where it's like the high point for special effects films, where the practical effects and the CGI kind of went hand in hand to create these amazing visuals. And then after a while, everybody started doubling down on CGI. And, if you watch... you watch Independence Day, which is, you know, almost 20 years old now, and then you watch something from like the early 2000s, that the movie from the early 2000s, even if it has like amazing CGI in it, it's probably look a lot more dated than Independence Day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like I think of the Star Wars prequels, like,
yeah,
you know, like I keep tinkering with them, but it looks very dated and not nearly as good as Independence Day.
Yeah, like watch Independence Day and then watch the CGI and then watch like Phantom Menace. And then even though Phantom Menace came out later, it looks older almost. It looks more dated because it's just used nothing but CGI. And the technology itself wasn't that great. I mean, I have a feeling that as impressed as we were with Avatar, for example, maybe in about 10 years or so, Avatar might end up looking like crap.
It already kind of does to me.
So maybe. But in that case, I can definitely give kudos to Independence Day. I mean, it has, like, I had fun with it when I first saw it, story-wise. I thought it was, like, fun and fluffy or whatever. I don't really get anything out of it story-wise now because I think it's just, like, horribly written. And they just should have hired a screenwriter. They should have just come up with the concept. Roland Emmerich and his partner Dean Devlin, they should have just come up with the concept and hired a screenwriter and let him do the writing instead of them like writing the script in 2 days or 3 days or something. That's what they said. They just cranked out the script in 2 days and sold it and got it greenlit.
I think we're going to get a chance to see what they would do now because they're making a sequel.
Oh yeah, that's true. That's coming out in 2015. So
yeah.
Hopefully they're not going to write that one.
Yeah,
but as far as like the visuals of it and the way it's edited, the excitement is just like, I think it's pretty much still there.
It's wonderful. Yeah. Not dated at all.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it is, a little bit overrated in terms of like, you know, it doesn't work as well as it used to as a full-on, like, complete entertainment package with, like, the story, if you add in the story and everything in there. But yeah, I think it's not as horrible to sit through as some of these other films. But yeah, that's what I got to say, I guess. Kareem, do you have any final words about it?
No, other than, you know, I agree with you. It seems to have held up over the years, but yeah, I guess in some ways it really did open the floodgates for, you know, these horrible Transformer, you know, films. But it's a surprising film. You know, it should have been a lot worse than it is. You know, and it's one of those times where it's like you put together a bunch of actors who really aren't that good, except for Will Smith, and and you know, all the elements come together, and it still holds up after all this time. So I think it's a definitely, you know, it's not overrated. It's not overrated at all, and I'm not sure why I chose it as being overrated.
Well, that's before you watched it, right?
Yeah, I mean, no, but I used to love that film. I just assumed that after all this time, you know, I liked it when I was 16 years old. So I assumed that now, and that's not always true. Of course, there are going to be films that when I was 16 years old, you know, I loved and I'm still going to love, you know, like Cool as Ice. But the fact is that I just thought Independence Day was just one of those films that it's kind of fun when you're young, but it actually is quite fun now, all these years later, surprisingly
enough. I think that's a valid point. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of films that I would pick as overrated now if I haven't seen them in like 15 years. And then thinking that it's going to be... you know, that happens sometimes, but then sometimes just like it can really backfire on you. Like with a film like, to me, with a film like The Monster Squad, when I got it on Blu-ray, and I was just like, I wasn't sure about it. I was like, this is one of my childhood favorites. You know, it probably sucks now. And then I watched it, and it's still one of my favorite monster films of all time. I think it's brilliant. So that stuff like that happens, and then there's some films that you loved when you were a kid and you watch it now and you're like, wow, this is like really, really terrible.
Yeah,
that happens as well, so that makes sense. But
like Boys in the Hood.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, I haven't seen Boys in the Hood in a while, but I have a feeling that I would really hate it now.
Yeah.
But yeah, you gotta drop the zero and get with the what?
De Niro.
Yeah I was trying to get you to do your Vanilla Ice voice.
Oh, okay, yeah. well, there's no point in impersonating perfection. Yeah. I would only do it in injustice.
That's true. So, Mike, any last words?
Well, I think I could still say that Independence Day is overrated just simply because it's like one of those wildly successful movies that like made a ton of money despite like having that huge flaw of a predictable B-level script and everything. Like, so in that sense, it's totally overrated.
Our underappreciated film for this week is the 1988 film They Live, directed by John Carpenter and starring the World Wrestling Federation's very own Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Good job.
And who's going to be reviewing this film this week?
That's going to be me. Basically, I picked They Live because I think it's one of the best possible things you can do with like a pulp sci-fi premise. It's really goofy in terms of like alien invasion type movies. It has those silly one-liners. It has a ridiculously long fight scene and all kinds of shootouts and blood and gore and stuff that you would totally want from a film like this. Yet at the same time, it offers this incredibly spot-on, very cynical commentary, political commentary on Reaganomics, you know, like trickle-down economics, basically showing that the stuff that started in the 80s of like the disintegration of the American middle class, the rich getting more and more of their share while the poor are, the working class are suffering. And it basically takes that premise and wraps it up in this like really goofy, fun, alien invasion formula. And I think they remade so many of John Carpenter's films, like Halloween, The Fog, Assault on 13th Precinct, it's interesting that I think They Live is ripe for a remake, because you can totally take this exact same story of this working class stiff finding these glasses that show you the real, like, alien invasion around him. You can really adapt it to all these, like, Occupy Wall Street and social media and really cool stuff like that. But I think as it is, it's like a, it's a really brilliant movie. So basically, Kareem didn't watch this, so...
No, I did. I really enjoyed the movie. I thought it was actually... I think you're wrong about that. I think that it was actually more a commentary, or maybe like a... looking to the future and predicting what it would be like to have an African-American president, you know, putting on the glasses and seeing the world as it is, being a reflection of the world as we currently see it, which is, as David Icke has said, as well as many other conspiracy theorists, the world that we see isn't in fact the world that we actually are living in. In fact, it's a world surrounded by aliens and lizards. And I think if you look closely enough, you'll see that the world that we live in is in fact the world that we are dying in.
Wait, hold on. You have actually seen this? Wait, hold on. Hold on just a second. Wait. You haven't seen this?
I haven't seen it.
Yes, mate. Of course you haven't. Okay. I just got like, I thought you were like pulling a prank, like you're telling us that you didn't see it and... But then when you started talking about it for longer than 10 seconds, I started realizing that you haven't seen it. But that was an interesting point regardless.
There was a certain level of profoundness to what I just said, even though it was all nonsense.
Yeah, probably. But, you know, you could probably sell that to, like, Alex Jones or one of those conspiracy theorists. That would go over well.
I think David Icke did do something about this.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Mike, what were you saying?
I was just going to say, so basically what you're saying is that you didn't see it and you're lying about everything.
There you go.
Not about everything.
Well,
the fact that I didn't see it.
Well, there is a human being / Egyptian British lizard called Kareem Mosin. Mm-hmm. That's the part that he didn't lie about.
Mm-hmm.
But, but yeah, Mike, what do you think? What do you think about They Live?
It's a movie that I like. I think I didn't see it when it came out, but I saw it in like maybe 1994, and I loved it right away, mainly for that 15-minute fight sequence. But then, like, the other things of just like the idea of those glasses, like when you're an impressionable youth like that, like it seems like that's how the world really is. And it's sad to say, even as I get older, it still seems that way.
Yeah, that's true. I think that's definitely part of the movie that to me makes it kind of timeless. And especially now, like back in the 80s, I remember They Live came out the same year as that movie Wall Street. And there's this line in Wall Street where Gordon Gekko talks to a coked up Charlie Sheen. And he says something like the top 80% of this country owns he says something like the 10% of this country owns the 80% of its wealth or something like that. And now it's like 1% of the country owns 90% of the wealth. Like it's gotten so much worse since then. So it's a lot more, you know, because you have all these aliens basically. It's like it's an allegory on the class warfare. It basically shows you that all the rich are either aliens or they... They're sympathizers. They go along with the aliens' plans because they get money and all these goods from the aliens. So like you have that homeless guy at the beginning. He turns up at the end at the aliens' meeting. He's all like dressed up and he's looking really nice. And he's like, "Look, everybody wants a piece of the pie. If you go along with their plan, you can become rich." And that was kind of like this really cynical and actually spot-on criticism of trickle-down economics, which basically says that if you go along with the rich people's plan, one day some of their wealth is going to trickle down on you, and you're going to get rich. I know it sounds ridiculous because it sounds like a ejaculation joke, but that's actually what they say.
I'm just thinking back to when you said a coked-up Charlie Sheen. It just seems... redundant.
Yeah, that's kind of a really like pointless thing to say. But yeah, that's true. But yeah, it sounds like, I'm not even trying to be crass. That's actually what like the Reaganomics or trickle down economics people always say, and Republicans still double down on that idea. That's why I think it would be really interesting if a remake of this came out now.
Yeah, I remember I liked a lot of weird things about this movie. Like, there's a part where, what's his name, Keith David or David Keith? I can never remember.
Keith David.
It's Keith Sweat.
Yeah.
But when he's talking about, like, his plight, about how he hasn't worked in 6 months, or he hasn't seen his family in 6 months. And in, like, 1995, I took that and set it to, like, a beat and made a little rap of it. I don't have it anymore. But, like, I liked it so much. Like, just, like, things, like, it's kind of weird.
I remember that.
No, you don't.
I remember that.
Wait, like you remember the movie, watching it when in the 90s?
Didn't I? You had that in LA, right?
Probably, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, you did that in the 90s. Now, I remember you. I do remember you playing a track for me, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, wow.
That was a conversation stopper.
Ah, that's interesting. But yeah, it is. It's like this really, I mean, the thing that I like about it is that, okay, it has all this like really serious commentary. Like it has this really brutal kind of like political satire, but at the same time they're not just like, okay, we're just going to make this a message film. Is that it has some like, it's a full-on like alien invasion, blood and gore and like shootout scenes with machine guns and, you know, aliens' heads exploding and one like cheesy one-liners and the most ridiculous fight scene ever put on film. So they make sure they get that out of the way as well. So it's like this perfect mix of all these elements.
That fight scene, I've never really thought about, but since we're talking about it in the context of like Reaganomics and everything, you think the length and the ridiculousness of it is like basically saying like, let the lower classes fight amongst themselves.
Yeah, while we get away with everything.
Yeah. And I mean, it literally is like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And I almost think that's like an intentional joke, like about like the viewers. We're basically like them.
Yeah. So the setup is that Roddy Piper discovered the glasses that basically shows behind every single magazine or ad or everything. Whatever ad you're looking at, basically it's not the ad. It's the subliminal message says like, obey, buy, consume, just go to sleep. You know, don't question things. And basically, he's the only one who I've noticed it so far. And his friend is Keith David. So he's trying to put the glasses on Keith David's character so that he can see the truth as well. But for some reason, Keith David refuses to put on the glasses. And this opens up like this. Like Mike said, I think it's something like, it must be at least 10 minutes long. This ridiculous fight scene where it's like they seriously fuck each other up just because Keith David is like refusing to put on the glasses. And then finally he does. But I think what you're saying about that makes sense in the sense that, you know, people who want other people like them to see the truth, they will resist it to the bitter end because, in a way, I guess maybe it's saying like because they don't want to be. They don't want to wake up, or because it's saying that, you know, they're just gonna like these people are just gonna fight it out over like the most ridiculous things instead of banding together and seeking the truth. But I think on top of that, it just turns out to be like an amazing fight scene.
I just looked it up, and apparently it's only like 5.5 minutes, but
it's
an uninterrupted fight between just two guys. That is pretty long.
That's ridiculous. I mean, it's just like, if you think about it, like the fight scenes now are just like 2-3 minutes long at most. And they usually are like one guy versus 100 guys or 100 henchmen or some shit like that. And this is just like two guys in a shitty alleyway, like with like garbage all around them, just fighting for like 5-6 minutes, like brutally too. Like they really mess each other up. And, I mean, I guess we can put that kind of subtext behind it, but the reality of it is that apparently this fight scene was supposed to be only like 1/2 minute long, and because Roddy Piper was a wrestler, and, you know, him and Keith David got really excited and they started choreographing it, and it just like kind of ballooned into this 5.5-6 minute long fight scene. And usually a director would be like, okay, let's just shoot this and then cut it down to 2 minutes. But John Carpenter, for some reason, was like, this is amazing. I'm just going to like show it, like show every single frame of it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I guess in that sense, you know, the decision to use the entire thing, it makes sense that way. But yeah, that fight scene itself, even if you don't watch the whole movie, just watching that fight scene is just like epic.
I think it ended up in there because how do you say no to Rowdy Roddy Piper?
Yeah, how do you say no to him saying, like, I'm going to put together this, like, 6-minute insane fight scene?
Yeah, that's like saying no to Van Gogh, like, if you wanted to paint a mural on your wall or something. You can't say no to that.
Yeah, you can't be like, you can only make it 5 feet by 3 feet. If he's like, I'm going to paint your entire house and ceilings and everything, you're like, yeah, just go ahead.
Yeah.
That's probably exactly what happened. John Carpenter was like, yeah, we're going to put every single frame of that shit on screen.
Yeah.
But it's just, the brilliant one-liners apparently belong to Roddy Piper as well. A lot of it, these are the kind of stuff that kind of makes their way into pop culture. When you talk about They Live, people talk about the fight scene. And they talk about the one-liners like, I came here to kick ass and chew bubble gum, and I'm all out of bubble gum.
Yeah.
That's an awesome line.
Yeah, but that's just brilliant. But, you know, those are all lines that apparently he would say during his, like, wrestling career before a match or at, like, press conferences and stuff. And he basically adapted it into the movie. But all of those, it's like, but that's what gives it, it's like kind of unique flavor. It's like you have this really, like, really goofy, like, schlocky stuff, but at the same time, you have a film that really makes you think about, you know, your place in this economy, especially since the last 20 some odd years when, you know, things have gotten much, much worse.
I was just reading again about this movie, and that line was actually ad-libbed by Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Oh, like on the spot?
Yeah, a lot of these things that make it so interesting were just kind of happy accidents or like little improvised things.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, and also like that first, I got to admit, it does take a little bit to really warm up and get started. The first 45 minutes of it, it can be a little bit boring, but you should definitely watch it for the first time he wears the glasses and starts noticing these things around him, and he basically goes into a bank and starts shooting the aliens, and that's the part where it's just like it really picks up, and it doesn't let down since then, because then you have the big fight scene, and then they go into the aliens where the aliens are hiding and everything, and it's just I don't know. I think even though it's a little bit dated now, I still think it really, really holds up.
I think the only thing that disappointed me about it, even like the first time I saw it, was just kind of the way it ended. It felt like it just kind of ends. I don't know any other way to.
Yeah, it's kind of. I mean, but it kind of also fits into this like tongue-in-cheek, hokey style to it as well, because it basically ends with. You know, a naked woman having on top of like a dude, and the dude turns out to be an alien. Mm. And it's such a weird, absurd way to end the film like that. But I think it fits the humor of it. But almost, but at the same time, I think I know what you're saying in terms of like you kind of want to see a little bit more, like what happened after that.
Yeah.
You know, it just like it sets up this like really intriguing premise, and you just want to kind of see like so what did they do, like what did people do, and it's you know, I kind of like it because of how ridiculous and goofy it is, but at the same time it's like I think it makes sense that it just kind of like it just kind of ends there.
Yeah,
but yeah, I think in between the beginning pretty much nothing happens in the first 10-15 minutes, and if they ever did a remake, I bet you that there would be like this giant kind of teaser with like some kind of alien attack or something like that before we get to meet the protagonist, which, yeah. like, you can't do that with an action movie anymore. Mm. You can't basically just, because this movie just starts, you meet the protagonist, there's, like, no hint or any kind of anything that shows you within the first 15 minutes or so that this is, like, an alien invasion movie or anything like that. But yeah, it's I think now they would, like, fuck around with that, which can be a blessing and a curse, but I think I still like really like the way this it plays out this way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you think if they remade it now, who would it be? Vin Diesel, The Rock?
Yeah. See, that's the thing that I just don't want to think about because I can't think of anybody who would be. It was originally supposed to be Kurt Russell, which I think Roddy Piper is the perfect choice for this because the character is supposed to be, you know, like. Is supposed to be kind of a dull, working class stiff, who, you know, throughout the film, that's one of the things that I like about it as well. Like, he doesn't make, like, usually an action hero makes all the right decisions and is, like, cool and charismatic. But this guy just, like, makes some really bad rookie mistakes. Like, he kidnaps this woman and then just falls asleep in her house. Like, you know, and then she's just like, all right, I'm out of here then. You know, there's a lot of stuff like that, but it's, to me, that's like the perfect casting. So any like big charismatic, I mean, Roddy Piper has the charisma, but like we're talking about, like, if you talk about Kurt Russell, where you expect him to act like an action hero who would make all the right decisions. And now I think maybe just like they did with Roddy Piper, whoever's like the up and coming kind of meathead, wrestling star right now might be perfect, but I don't know who that is.
John Cena or something.
Yeah, maybe. But has to have that kind of sense of humor too.
So or they could go the direction of making it really serious and have like Michael Fassbender.
Yeah, yeah, they could do that, but it's like it would lose a lot from the concept. Like, I just like that balance of it. But yeah, if they're like, you know, I wouldn't give it to like because. Vin Diesel doesn't really have, like... The closest I can think of is The Rock.
Mm.
But The Rock is, like, so, like... The dude looks like... Like, Roddy Piper looks like a construction worker. Like, yeah. you can sell him as, like, a construction worker. But The Rock is, like, so beefed up that it will be so tough to, like, convince the audience that he's, like, an everyday, like, working-class American.
Yeah.
So that would be kind of tough to pull off. But I don't know. You can also make it completely different, too. You can make it like someone, like during when the Occupy Wall Street movements was going on, and someone who's like completely apathetic or maybe like a stockbroker or something, you know, who kind of like changes sides after discovering the alien connection.
Mm.
I don't know. Like you could really play around with that, but you know, maybe in that case it's a shitty idea to think of a remake.
Yeah, I wouldn't really want to see that. It would be too depressing.
Yeah, that would be like, because it's like things have gotten so much worse since They Live came out that it's like that Independence Day thing. It's like when you have that much destruction, how do you make a comedy out of it?
Yeah,
I think it's kind of the same thing when you have 1% of the country controlling 90% of its wealth. How do you make a goofy, like, B-movie out of that concept when it's just, like, it's such a depressing thought to begin with?
Yeah.
So that's kind of tough. But on its own, I think it's definitely a movie worth renting in terms of, like, if you want to see, like, a really good alien invasion B-movie that actually has a lot of... like thematic substance to it as well.
Yeah,
definitely. But so Kareem, going back to your conspiracy theories, anything you want to tell us about the lizard people?
I'm not gonna say anything explicitly. I'm just pretty sure that they exist, and that if we don't do something about it, it'll be like a film called The Matrix
or Fight Club.
Yeah,
Oh, anybody listening to this on headphones, try putting your ear pieces in the opposite ears and listening to what Kareem says. Maybe you'll hear the truth then.
Yeah, maybe like slow it down or get into the
just play it very slowly, but the moment, just turn it on the moment the lion roars at the beginning of the MGM sign.
Oh yeah, and then sync it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. That's when you'll get your first peek into the lizard people.
Yes.
Yeah, they will dominate us all. There's no escape.
Yes. That was our overrated and underappreciated film for this week. As I mentioned, our overrated film was
Independence Day.
And our underappreciated film was They Live. We hope you can join us next week, where we'll be looking at very amazing films which we haven't come up with yet. But we would love for you to join us. And remember, please leave your comments on Ege's blog.
Yeah, on our comment section. Yeah. Leave us a comment and let us know how we can improve it. Or if you just think we suck, just tell us. That's fine. Yeah, but hopefully see you again next time. Bye.
God bless us, everyone.